Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 23, titled The Song of the Avanti Brahmana, text number 50.
Janastu hetu sugadu khayoschet kimatmanaschatrahi bhau mayostat Jihvam kojis sandashadis swadadhis tadvedanayam kadamanya kupyet.
Janaha, these people,
but
hetahu, the cause, suga dukhayoho, of my happiness and distress. Chet, if, kim, what, atmanaha, for the self, cha, and atra, in this conception, he, indeed, bhavamayoho, they pertain to the material bodies, tat, that, status of being the performer and the sufferer. Jihvam, the tongue. Kochit, sometimes. Sandashati, is bitten. Swa, by one's own. Dadbhihi, teeth. Tat, of that. Vedanayam, in the distress. Kadamaya, with whom? Kupyet, can one get angry? This is a translation purport by servants of Srila Prabhupada. If you say that these people are the cause of my happiness and distress, then where is the place of the soul in such a conception? This happiness and distress pertain not to the soul, but to the interactions of material bodies. If someone bites his own tongue with his own teeth, at whom can he become angry in his suffering? Purport. Although bodily pleasure and pain are felt by the soul, one must tolerate such duality, understanding it to be a creation of one's own material mind. If one accidentally bites his own tongue or lip, he cannot become angry and pull out his own teeth. Similarly, all living beings are individual part and parcels of God, and thus no different from each other. All of them are meant to serve the Supreme Lord in spiritual equality. If the living beings give up their master's service and instead quarrel among themselves, they will be forced to suffer by the laws of nature. If the conditioned souls establish artificial relationships of affection based on the material body and having nothing to do with God, then time itself will destroy such relationships, and they will be subjected to further suffering. But if the individual living entities understand each other to be the same family, all having connection with the Supreme Lord, their mutual friendship will develop. Thus, one should not exhibit anger that will be harmful to oneself and others. Although the Brahmana was receiving kind of offerings of charity from some people and being harassed and beaten by others, he denied that these people were the ultimate cause of his happiness and distress. For he was fixed on the platform of self-realization beyond the material body and mind.
Om Ajnanatim Randasya Jnananjana Salaghaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. So it's a very interesting verse in this section of Bhagavatam, where the pastime of Avanti Brahman is going on. So as we know, Avanti Brahman, he was a wealthy man, and he became a poor man because different people took away his wealth. including his relatives, people in general, natural calamities. So he became a poor man, and at that point, due to causeless mercy of the Lord, because he had a bit of piety, renunciation developed in his heart, and he accepted the renounced order of life. And now, after accepting the renounced order of life, he started roaming around, having no material possession, or a very menial material possession, like kamandalu to carry some water, the water pot, and dirty clothes, nothing else. So he was traveling around different villages, and people were treating in different ways. And many of them were treating very badly. They were insulting Avanti Brahman. They were spitting at him. They were, when he was about to eat something, whatever he collected by begging, some will pass urine on that. Like that, people were treating very badly. However, he came to the conclusion that these people are not the ultimate cause of my suffering or happiness. So this is a very important point. And in this particular verse, it is mentioned that if you say that these people are the cause of my happiness and distress, then where is the place of the soul in such a conception? So he says, this happiness and distress pertain not to the soul, but to the interaction of the material bodies. So here is a very important philosophical concept that is being introduced. That is, the soul is beyond matter, and when we are talking about the suffering, it is not just about the soul. Soul in the pure state cannot suffer. There is no concept of suffering as such. It is completely full of bliss, knowledge and eternality. So it cannot suffer. So there is a very interesting verse in the 10th canto, in the 14th chapter, Lord Brahma says, explaining this concept, that in the pure state, how it is completely aloof even from the concept of liberation and bondage. So what to speak about suffering, even the soul is beyond the liberation and bondage. So Lord Brahma says, ajnana sapnya bhava bandha moksha. So he says, ajnana, that is, it is only due to the ignorance. The conception of material bondage and the conception of liberation are both manifestation of ignorance. So it's an interesting point. That is, even the liberation is due to ignorance, and same as the material bondage. So if you try to understand this, we can understand how, or in the pure state, how can one completely aloof from the matter, aloof from both the gross body and the subtle mind. So suppose if we are all conditioned souls, many of us, maybe some liberated souls will be there, but we are conditioned. So if we consider ourselves conditioned, and if we take the concept of illusion, if we take the concept of material bondage, so this verse says, okay, there is no concept of material bondage. How is it possible? Because we understand, we hear always that, okay, we are completely bound by the material energy. We are caught hold of the material energy, and we are just like, you know, chained. So it is mentioned there is no concept of material bondage. Why? Because this bondage, it doesn't exist in the sense, it is just an imagination by which we identify with the body and the soul. It is only the illusion, and we think that we are completely, we are the body and we are the mind. However, actually there is no material bondage as such, as we think, a bondage in which we are locked up. There is no such lock as such. But it is that we are identifying with the matter. So in that sense, it said, okay, there is no concept of material bondage. We also know the story, the nice story of a disciple and a guru. The disciple started saying, guru asked him to do something. Okay, you get up and you perform devotional service. Then the disciple said, no, I can't, because, you know, I am completely in Maya. So, you know, how can I get up? How can I perform my devotional activities? Next day, guru said, okay, that's fine. You come next day. So he came, and the disciple wanted Guru to go somewhere. So he requested Guru, can you go with me? He said, Guru said, no, I can't. And what he was doing, he said, this tree is not leaving me. So what Guru was doing, he actually hugged down to a tree, and he said, you know, the tree is not leaving me. So the disciple said, what is the point saying, tree is not leaving me? Actually, you are holding on to the tree. So as such, the bondage, as we say, the bondage doesn't exist in the sense, it is only a misidentification that the spirit soul is going through. So once that misidentification is removed, then the soul is again free. Then, the point number two, then how can we understand there is no concept of liberation? So it is explained, even if we talk about liberation, liberation means, okay, getting out from the material energy. Okay, that is liberation. So, it is mentioned, even just getting out from the material clutches, from the material bondage as it is said here, still it doesn't make any sense, okay, we accept there is a material bondage, and we think, okay, there is a concept of liberation, okay, that is getting out from the material energy. So, it is mentioned, even that doesn't make any sense, because what is the positive activity the soul is going to perform once the soul is getting out of the material clutches, even if we accept that is a reality. Okay, a prisoner can be released from the prison. So, when one a prisoner is in the prison, for him it is wonderful, okay, I can go outside. But, what is the positive activity that prisoner is going to engage when he is getting out of the prison? So, usually we know the prisoner can get out of the prison, but since he doesn't have any positive activity to perform, they come back again to the prison cell. Because there is nothing to do. He will again commit the sinful activities and he will get back to the prison. So in that sense, what is the whole concept of liberation? It is insignificant when we consider that the spirit soul has an eternal activity by which he can be engaged happily and eternally in service of the Lord. So when we talk about the spiritual activity of the spirit soul, the liberation is insignificant, or it doesn't exist as such, or there is no independent existence. So in that sense it is mentioned, okay, even the liberation is just the product of ignorance. Okay, now if we consider a liberated soul, for him actually both the bondage and the liberation are indeed just an illusion. It doesn't exist. It is just a manifestation of ignorance. Why? It is given the example of the sun. If somebody is near the sun, is there any concept of day and night? First of all, is there any concept of night? No, there cannot be any concept of night, because the light is there all the time. And there is no concept of day also. Why? Because without night, there is no meaning to day. Because always it is always there is illumination, then what is the concept of day? So the day and night is coming in the conditioned nature. So in the same way, the liberation and bondage is only coming in the conditioned nature. There is no such concept when somebody is completely liberated. When one is completely identifying oneself as a spirit soul, then both are product of ignorance. So Lord Brahma very nicely explains this point. Now here, if you see, why still it is mentioned in the purport, if you see the purport, the first sentence itself is, although bodily pleasures and pains are felt by the soul. So the text is saying one thing and the purport is saying another thing. So the reason is, okay, in one sense, okay, there is suffering. What is that sense? That is, one is conditioned or one is identifying completely with the body and the mind. Then in the platform of false ego, definitely there is the concept of suffering. One has to suffer because one is identifying, one is considering the interactions of the material bodies, both subtle and gross, to be my own suffering. So in that sense, there is suffering. Otherwise, there is no suffering. Now, this false ego, it is very interesting because the false ego is, first of all, it is coming into picture when the pure spirit soul is coming in touch with the modes of material nature. As it is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Karanam Guna Sangosya Sat Asat Yoni Janmasu. So, when the pure spirit soul, when it is coming in touch with the three modes of material nature, the mode of goodness, passion and ignorance, okay, then one has this false ego and one has the material mind, one has the material intelligence, one has all the material identification. And till then there is nothing. He is pure completely. False ego, if you have to understand, you know, if you take a simple example, if there is a natural calamity, suppose there is a, you know, big flood in Pakistan. If we hear the natural calamity and if we hear it is being millions of people are affected by such a natural calamity, we feel, what do we feel? We feel quite unhappy. We may feel sympathy. But do we really skip our meals, our prasadam, because we hear this thing? No. We still will go up, we will have a nice prasadam, we will glorify. It's fine, you know, or a karmi, he will go and eat. Okay, there is some amount of sympathy, but it's alright. You know, it will not affect our day-to-day life. We are not so much in distress, seeing others' distress. Then, suppose if something happens in our own country, we will be a little bit more worried. And suppose it is in our own region, our own state, this natural calamity is hitting, then we will be little serious. Okay, we will say, okay, which city was affected? Is it affecting our family? So if something happens to our own place, and if it is our own family, then what happens? Then one is in complete distress. So the cause by which we are under distress is the same. That is natural calamity. But depending on whom we identify ourselves with, our dear friends or our close relatives, our loved ones, depending on that we actually feel pain. So that is the false ego. With the amount of false ego we have, amount of false identification we have, not only with our body and the mind, but whom we are identifying with our body and mind, depending on that, that much we actually suffer. So their suffering becomes our suffering. So this is the point of false ego. And this false ego, when it's coming, it's not just acting on us straight away, but through the medium of mind and intelligence. So the mind is playing a big part. So it is said, the mind is the main cause of happiness and distress. Because mind has the conception of happiness and distress. Okay, this is happiness and that is distress. And depending on that, we feel, okay, this is good for me, that is not good for me. And from mind, even not just happiness and distress, okay, there is false pride also. Pride comes. Even though we are insignificant, we feel, oh yeah, I am very significant and everyone should respect me. And if some doesn't respect me, then we get insulted. This is false pride. It's a story of a donkey. Donkey was working very hard and everyone was ill-treating him. You know, master will, you know, go here, you know, feed him something. Sometime he will get beaten. And the donkey was getting, you know, years passed, and donkey started thinking, you know, what's really going on? I am working very hard and I am doing such an important job, carrying so many things. Still, nobody is respecting me. What's the whole point? So one day, the owner, he had to carry a deity of the Lord. And he had no other option. And the deity was quite heavy. So he put the deity on top of the donkey. And the donkey started walking. And when the donkey started walking, he saw, now everyone is paying respect. All of a sudden, so far I have worked so hard, nobody has paid any respect. Now that everyone is paying respect, so donkey started feeling very happy. Yes, it is very, very wonderful. Finally, my whole hard work is paid for, because now everyone is paying respect. So after, you know, he walked from one place to other place, the deity was off. Then again, people started treating him in the same way. So the donkey is not realizing, it's not the respect for him, but the Supreme Lord is there on top of him, and so people are respecting. So even if people are showing some respect to us, we have to understand who is the actual cause or whom that belongs to. Even the respect, it doesn't belong to us.
We cannot take any credit.
So that is the point. So it doesn't belong to us. So this false identification, false ego, make us think that, okay, it's all, yeah, it's mine, you know, it's all my wonderful qualities, so people are respecting me. And here, the Avanti Brahman, even both respect and disrespect, he didn't identify to himself. He understood his spiritual position. So that is the transcendental existence. That is the spiritual existence. In spiritual existence, one is not in ignorance, first of all. No ignorance. You know, it's like no sleep. No, you know, we sleep everywhere. During chanting, in Bhagavatam, you know, many places, you know, there. And that is the sign of ignorance. You know, getting up itself is a big task. First, the alarm is ringing. We pick the alarm. Some people throw the alarm. Some people press the snooze button. That is a press of Maya. You know, snooze. Then finish. And some people remove the battery. I used to remove the battery because sometimes it's so hard to find the button. So, you know, pull off the whole thing and remove the battery and, you know, then again sleep. So we have so many different kinds of ignorance, you know, affecting in so many different ways. So, in the spiritual existence, there is no such ignorance, first of all. An example we can see here itself. Say, Janmashtami and Prabhupada appearance day, you know, 2 days before. So in Janmashtami, actually people were coming out of ignorance. We all got up so early. You know, usually, you know, we don't otherwise, you know, we may get up before the service. Or, you know, half an hour before the service to get up ready. And, you know, this is pretty much all ashramas awake by, you know, 2 o'clock. If you see Mangalarati, if you come, already it's packed. It's packed. There is no ignorance, no laziness. Everyone is willing, very happy to serve Krishna, eager to serve Krishna. Janmashtami day, you ask anybody, can you please do something? Immediately, yes. Even people are asking, you know, please engage me in some service. One devotee asked me, you know, I have 2 hours between 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock. So could you please engage me? I have, till 10 o'clock I have Bhagavatam. And 12 onwards my service is starting, other service is starting. So I have got 2 hours. So could you please give me some service? So this is the eagerness. So this is actually spiritual existence. So this is spiritual world actually. If somebody is in that consciousness, eager to serve, that is spiritual world. And unlimited bhoga for the Lord. I got up early, you know, I was setting up the milk sweets, you know, the 4:10 offering in the morning. And I first went to the fridge and, you know, I was picking each item. So, you know, I was seeing, you know, so many items are coming in the sandesh, you know, 5 different varieties of sandesh. You know, 4 or 5 varieties of sweet rice. There was cheesecake. There is milk. Okay, there is water, which is usual. And, you know, items are coming from the fridge and, you know, I was trying to fit in the DT plates, and it was not, you know, it was just coming out, you know, it's not fitting in, and, you know, a few items, you know, in the plate. So in the spiritual world, even the plate should be unlimited, because we can fit in unlimited items, so many plates, and somehow or other I fitted everything. Bhaktisar Prabhu was there helping me, and we fitted, you know, set up everything, and finally I had to put the water, because we need to have water along with the milk. So I pushed the water cup inside, and then I closed the lid, and it was time was almost up. Then I heard the sound, you know, cling. Oh, and the water started pouring from the plate. Then I was thinking, oh no, this is Janmashtami, and this is the first offering, and I'm going to give, and this is going to be, you know, a disaster, because the water spilled the whole thing. I just opened the lid, and you know, what happened? I opened, and again the glass actually, cup fell over me. Nothing happened to the plate. It was at the edge. The whole water fell on my dhoti. And I was very happy. I was thinking, okay, this is Krishna's arrangement. So that the whole his offering doesn't get spoiled, but just my dhoti. So again, I got some water and the offering went on time. So this is like that. The offering, so many varieties. This is spiritual world. So many varieties. And lunchtime, I was doing the, you know, after Rajbhog offering, you know, taking the items from the altar to outside. And you know how many items were there? The whole, there was a small curtain, and the whole other side was full of offerings. And it took few minutes. Aarti was late, because usually it is 5 minutes to take off the offerings and clean all the place. But the items were going one after another, and it took so much of time, and there were around 160 items for offering. 160 for lunch, Rajbhog offering, at least 160. It was a rough figure, could be more. So if you see how many items were offered to the Supreme Lord on His appearance day, it was at least few hundreds of items, you know, 400 or 500, like that. So many items for the Lord. So this is spiritual world. And we had to understand, in the spiritual world, this is happening every day. Every day is a festival. So we can't even conceive just one day. So think about every day festival. And it is also given that even when Krishna appeared, the whole atmosphere changed. Previously, when the demons come, even people, the brahmanas couldn't do the sacred sacrifice. But when Krishna appeared, the whole atmosphere was changed. It's like even when Janmashtami is here, the day was good, and the night whole yajna was going on in the courtyard, apart from the aarti and offering here, the whole atmosphere is completely changed. And people are so eager to see the Supreme Lord. So eager. I was standing after midnight aarti, I was standing in the altar, and I was looking at the Lord, and I was looking at the devotees and the people who are coming for darshan. People are so eager. You know, they are just pushing ahead. You know, I want to see the Lord. Such an eagerness. So that eagerness itself purifies. I wish, you know, every day people had such eagerness to see the Supreme Lord. Oh, it is such an amazing, you know, people just want to see the Lord. It's like in the 10th canto, Gopis says, the Gopis are complaining, they are criticizing Lord Brahma. for creating the eyelid so that they couldn't see the Supreme Lord even for just an eye blink, the time of eye blink. They say, Jada Udikshadam Prakshmakrit Drisham. Jada means, you know, somebody who is quite dull. So the gopis are telling, oh, Lord Brahma, he is the creator, he is a dull man. Why? Because he has created this eyelid for us so that even for a moment, we can't actually tolerate the separation from the Supreme Lord. And here, in this Janmashtami, people were actually criticizing the crowd control because they were actually pushing. But they were doing a good job. Otherwise, it is not possible for everyone to see the Supreme Lord. In the spiritual world, because of the inconceivable potency, everyone can see the Lord simultaneously, but here can't. So it is very important, you know, pushing them away. So one person, you know, Abhishek Prabhu, I think he'll push from this side, go to the next. Here Chaitanya Prabhu was standing, he's pushing from one side to the next. They are seeing, you know, how people are, you know, they are just being pushed and they're going out, okay. In a few seconds, they are passing from Gauranithai to Jagannath and they are out of the door. So this is the eagerness, even just to see the Lord. So in the spiritual existence, okay, we have to understand, this is very wonderful. And some people, maybe this could be the most, you know, the best darshan they ever had. Because, you know, they are coming from all, you know, somewhere else and they are just coming on Janmashtami and seeing the Lord. They are seeing for a few seconds, but they are getting so much of mercy because He is so merciful on His Janmashtami day, on His birthday. It is often mentioned that the Lord is very, very happy to reciprocate to His devotees, especially to His pure devotees. So one may ask the question, how the Lord, is He actually partial to His devotees? It's often considered, okay, the Lord is partial to His devotees. But it is mentioned in Bhagavatam, oh no, He is not actually partial. Even Kunti Devi mentioned, you know, he's not partial, He is completely impartial. It only depends on our surrender or how much we want. That is the only question. It is like, if the sun is shining very bright, it doesn't make any sense for a blind man. But it makes a sense, complete sense for somebody who has vision. So it's not the problem with the sun, but it's the problem with one who is accepting that or not accepting that. So it's just up to us. So for atheist, is considered a blind man, because for him, even though the sun is shining, he can't get anything. Similarly, for the atheist, even though the Lord is present, he can't get the benefit of the presence of the Lord. Whereas for a mixed devotee who is doing business with the Supreme Lord, who thinks, okay, I will do this, so I will get this. Once their material suffering is mitigated, then they don't want the Supreme Lord. So as Bhagavad Gita mentions, Artho Jigyasir Arthasti Gyani Icha Bharadashava. Artho, one who is suffering, Arthardi, one who wants money, and one who is inquisitive, when their need is fulfilled, then they are not much bothered about the Lord. So it is because of their problem that they are not getting further mercy of the Lord. However, for a pure devotee, the Lord is always bestowing the mercy and they are always ready to accept. For the other class, the Lord is ready to bestow the mercy, but they are not ready to accept. Atheist, no time, and mixed devotee, sometime. So this is the difference. So when we see the devotees on the highest platform, the devotees from the spiritual world, and he who comes in the pastime of the Supreme Lord, they are always ready to accept the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And they always glorify the Supreme Lord. As we can see in Kunti Devi's pastime, she says, she is remembering the pastime of Damodar, and she is telling, it is bewildering to me, because the Supreme Lord, for him, even the fear personified, can't stand in front of the Supreme Lord. But the Supreme Lord is crying in front of his mother, seeing the stick. So thinking about this pastime, she is telling, okay, I am getting bewildered. And here it is mentioned that even Kunti Devi, she can't completely understand this pastime. Okay, she is trying to understand the pastime, but she can't. She is telling, okay, I am getting bewildered in one sense. But the position of the residents of Vrindavan is even superior to position of Kunti Devi. It's mentioned in the purport, if we consider Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, Mother Yashoda, their position is much superior because the Lord gave something which is so special to them, to those devotees, because of their love. And that is the childhood pastimes of Krishna. Even though the Lord was born from, you know, Devaki and Vasudev, even still they couldn't get the nectarian pastime of childhood. Only the devotees in Braj, including Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda and all the other residents, they could actually enjoy the childhood pastime of the Supreme Lord. So it is mentioned in 10th canto, again the 8th chapter, it's mentioned, as the time progressed, it's mentioned, Kalena Vrajatalpena Gokule Ramakeshavu Janupyam Sahapanipyam Ringamano Vijahrutu. It's mentioned, the Lord was born, Janmashtami is finished, you know, the Lord is born, Nandorsav is finished, that was yesterday. And Kalena Vrajatalpena, he killed Putana, he killed Shakatasur. So after the time passed, this is the spiritual world, still it is mentioned the time passed, Kalena Vrajatalpena, a little bit of time was passed. Then the Lord started to manifest another pastime. So Ramakrishnascha Govraje, that is both Lord Ram, that is Balaram, and Krishna. The importance, the significance of this pastime, or at this point of time, is that Janupyam Saha Panipyam Ringamano Vijahrudu, they started using two of their limbs. That is, one is Janu, that is their knee, and they started using their hand, their palm. So they started crawling, in other sense, they started crawling. So their crawling pastime started after just a bit of time passed. And it's mentioned, Janupyam Saha Panipyam Ringamano Vijahrudu. So both, all of them were enjoying this. So seeing this, one Brahmana actually mentioned, as Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse in the Bhagavatam, he mentioned that Shrutim apare smritim itare bharatam anye bhajantu bhavabhita aham iha nandam vande yasyalande param brahma. This Brahmana is telling, let others fearing material existence worship the Vedas, the Vedic supplementary Puranas and the Mahabharata, but I shall worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Brahman is crawling. So this Brahman, he is glorifying the residents of Vrindavan. He is mentioning, okay, others can study Vedas, but I just worship Nanda Maharaj, because on his courtyard the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is crawling now. Then when the Lord started crawling, it is mentioned, the whole residents of Vrindavan, they became happy. They started saying, oh, Krishna and Balaram, now they are crawling. So Bhagavatam says, Tavankri yukmam anukrishya sari srupanto kosha prakosha ruchiram vraja kardameshu tannada krishna manasa anusiste lokam mikta pradivad iva upayet antimatro. So when they started crawling, it is mentioned, Tavankri yukmam anukrishya sari srupanto. So it is mentioned, okay, there is a speciality of their crawling. First of all, they were just dragging their legs. You know, if a kid is rolling, you know, it's just dragging. And in a particular way, that is mentioned as Sari Sripanto, just like that of a serpent is crawling. How the serpent is going this way and that way, zigzag. In the same way, the Krishna and Balaram, they are going in this way. And where in the Vraja Kardameshu. Vraja Kardameshu means, it's on the mud of Vraja. And the speciality is that it is mixed with the urine and cow dung. So it is very special, it's a mix. And in that, the Lord started crawling. And when they started crawling like that, they had the ankle bells. And the ankle bells started producing very wonderful sound. And all the residents of Vrindavan, they became completely attracted to this sound vibration. And they started watching how the Supreme Lord and Lord Balaram, how are they crawling. So seeing this, so they were walking towards Krishna and Balaram. And at the same time, Krishna and Balaram, they were hearing the ankle bells of the elderly gopis. Because the gopis were moving towards them, and they were listening the ankle bells of the gopis. So when they started listening the ankle bells of the gopis, they actually moved towards them. They were thinking, okay, these gopis, they must be my mother. So Krishna was thinking, okay, this gopi, elderly gopi, oh, she is my mother, she is Yashoda. And Lord Balaram started thinking, no, the other lady, oh, she is Rohini, she is my mother. And they started approaching these different gopis, thinking them to be their own mothers. However, when they reached Actually, this lady started telling, "Oh, Krishna and Balaram are crawling towards me." But when they heard the sound, Krishna and Balaram understood, yes, oh no, they are not my mother. So they actually started, they felt, okay, I am in fear, oh no, they are unknown, they are strangers, I won't go near them. As if it is said, Mukta Prabhidavativa, that is Mukta Prabhidavat. As if they were completely afraid of, you know, the strangers, they actually moved back. So this was enjoyed by Mother Rohini, by Mother Yashoda and all other residents of Vrindavan. And it is mentioned, not only them, but the lordships themselves were enjoying this pastime. After this, it is mentioned, Tanmataro Nichasudo Grihnaya Srivanto Pangangaraga Rujro Parigrahya Dorpyam Dattastanam Prabhipadosma Mukhan Niriksha Smikta Smitalpa Dashanam Yayutu Pramodam. It is mentioned, when they actually found, okay, Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini, they found, okay, they want actually their own mother. So they approached Krishna and Balaram and they were crawling towards them. And it is mentioned how Krishna's body was decorated. It is mentioned Panganga Raga Rucharav. That is, Krishna's body, it is dark blue in complexion. And that is mixed with the cow dung, which is a kind of greenish. And the cow urine. And also Brajraj, the dust of Vrindavan. So Krishna's body had a completely different color altogether, because it is mixed with so many different colors. And seeing this, they became ecstatic and they actually picked, Mother Yashoda picked Krishna and Mother Rohini picked Balaram. And they embraced, straight away they embraced. That is, Grihnaya Stuvando. They actually embraced Parigrihya Dorpyam. With both their hands they actually embraced the Supreme Lords. Then they actually started feeding, breastfeeding Krishna and Balaram. And as they were breastfeeding Krishna and Balaram with their mothers, they opened their small mouth. So when they opened their mouth, it is mentioned Mother Yashoda started seeing the tiny, tiny teeth. That is Snigdha Smita Alpa Dashanam. So there was, the Lord was smiling, and as he was smiling, while sucking the breast, the small teeth was coming out. And seeing this, it is mentioned, she became completely ecstatic. Her maternal affection grew to the highest degree. It is mentioned, Yayutu Pramotam. She was in complete transcendental bliss. So this is spiritual existence, where the devotees are eternally performing pastimes with the Supreme Lord, and they are in complete ecstasy. And there is no concept of whatsoever regarding the ignorance. There is no laziness. There is no lack of enthusiasm. Nothing. So here it is mentioned in the purport of to this verse, Srila Prabhupada mentions, is very special because of the 8th chapter of Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada has still, he himself has written the purport. It's mentioned, as the mothers cared for their respective babies, by the arrangement of Yogamaya, the babies thought, here is my mother. And the mothers thought, here is my son. So this is the arrangement of Yogamaya. Because of Yogamaya, Krishna and Balaram, they were really thinking that they are my mother. And Mother Yashoda and Mother Rohini, they were really thinking that they are my sons. So that was the intense affection they had. So here, Avanti Brahman is showing that is, okay, one is beyond the material body and the mind, and one is pure spirit soul. And he is on the realized platform. So we had to understand, when one is on a very high transcendental platform, he has actually two kinds of lives. It's not just one life, it's two. One is internal and the other is external. So even from the raga, when one develops the raga, the spontaneous attachment for the Supreme Lord, these two kinds of lives starts. So it is mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Seva Sathaka Rupena Siddha Rupena Chatrahi. That is, Seva, the service, is in two ways. One is in the Sathaka form, as a practicing devotee, and as a Siddha form, in the perfected devotee. So one, he is on the elevated platform. Externally, one is acting as a devotee. He is following all the regulative principles. He is standing fixed number of rounds. He is performing devotional activities. He is serving. He is doing everything externally. He is dressing up properly. So externally, everything looks like he is just like a normal devotee, just like Srila Prabhupada. Externally, everything like a proper Pakka devotee. But for them, there is an internal life. As much as they have an external life, that much they have an internal life also. That is Siddha Rupena Chatrahi. That is, they have the internal meditation in which they are serving the Supreme Lord in their Siddha body, in their actual form, in their original form. Where they know their eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. And in that mood, they are serving the Supreme Lord. So, one who is realized, even though he is performing a pastime in the material world, a devotee who is completely realized, he knows that he is a spirit soul, and he knows completely that he is the servant, eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, and he knows what is the relationship with the Supreme Lord. So when he is enacting that pastime of preaching, maybe one is enacting pastime of cleaning, one is enacting pastime of worshipping the deity. Okay, externally he is doing the activity, but at the same time he is performing the activities internally. So this point we have to understand. That is a very, very high developed platform, having raga, having spontaneous attachment for the Supreme Lord. So in that platform, one is completely beyond the duality. Because duality is existing, the heat and cold and the suffering, everything is existing only because of misidentification with the body. And at this point, that devotee is beyond this misidentification. Not only that, he is completely in knowledge of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, including the service. At this point, we had to understand, this is not an artificial arrangement. It's not an artificial meditation. Okay, today I will do my service and I will think about something else. No, it's not artificial. It's not just like a planned arrangement. But it happens naturally when one gets purified. When one's hankering for the Supreme Lord increases to a greater degree, when one is fully away from the material contamination, when the anarthas are gone from the heart, then naturally that arises. So, in our premature state, we cannot imitate that. But we can understand that and we can appreciate that. So, for us, it is still very important to act as a sadhaka, because we haven't perfected as a sadhaka. Still miles to go to get to the platform where we can actually perform our sadhana bhakti in a nice way. So for us, we have to be very much regulated. We have to get up for the mangalarati. We had to go through the morning program. So for ashram devotees, we had to do it every day, because we are living in the temple, and those who are living nearby, yes, that is the standard. One can get up and one can come for the mangalarati. One can do the Tulsi Puja, one can chant with the devotees, one can attend Guru Puja, one can go about the Bhagavatam, then have Prasadam, the whole program one can attend. Even if somebody is living away, still one can have a regulated program, that is, you know, weekend coming for the temple, attending the morning program. So, the sadhana means, practice means, it has to be regulated. So we cannot give an excuse, okay, I am still living far, so I will never come for Mangalarati. You know, it's not for me, it's only for the devotees who are in the temple or, you know, around the temple, no. One needs to have that regulated program so that one can actually come to the platform of regulated devotional service where one actually start listening. When one has the whole regulated program, then in terms of chanting, one actually start listening. Prabhupada mentioned in the purport to one of the prayers of Kivan Kunti that everything starts from hearing. Even higher forms of devotional service start from listening. So, by regulation, one can come to the platform of at least start hearing the holy names of the Supreme Lord. And from there, we can actually make progress. Then, it is mentioned, when the hearing is perfected, then other things will also become perfected. So, everything starts from perfection of hearing. So, without perfection of hearing, one cannot think about anything further. So, that is the goal that we have in front of us as practicing devotees. So, in conclusion, I would say, as the first we understood, that is, the soul is beyond the matter, beyond the mind and the gross body and the subtle mind. And even the concept of liberation and bondage is a manifestation of ignorance, if you consider a pure spirit soul. And then we understood what is the meaning of transcendental spiritual existence. And, you know, before that, how the false ego is playing the role, and, you know, how mind is obstructing us in our devotional service. Then the transcendental existence, how it is free from everything and is completely engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Then we understood how the advanced devotees, how they act. And how we had to follow, understanding all these things, how we had to follow devotional service in a regulated fashion.
So I conclude here and see if there's any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhu.
When Yashoda and Rohini saw one truth, how they became accepted?
Okay. Oh yeah, that's a very interesting question, because you may know better than me. Still, I will explain. So Krishna is manifesting his pastime. So we had to understand in the light of, okay, this is the pastime, this is the leela of Krishna. So consider a normal mother. If she has a baby, first of all, if one sees her child is crawling for the first time, how happy she would be. But in the material existence, how many times can we see their child crawling for the first time? How many times can we see? Only one. We cannot see unlimited time. Only one. Once we can see. So we take photograph, videos or whatever. So only once we can see the child crawling for the first time. But in the transcendental pastime, and even for the pure devotees, these pastimes are manifested in their pure mind unlimited times. So the Lord is crawling in their mind all the time. So this is the first difference. Second, even for such a mother, when the teeth started growing, the mother has a look, and she, that is a maternal affection. When she sees, in the material sense, if she sees the first teeth coming out, she becomes very happy. So here we have to see, this is a transcendental pastime, still Krishna is growing. Krishna is beyond time, Krishna is time. And he's beyond the material time, still his body is growing, and not only his body is growing, his tooth is also growing. There was no teeth, now the tooth is coming. So seeing that, her maternal affection went to a very, very high degree. So it is Yayutu Pramodam. Pramodam means the transcendental bliss. Okay. Any other? Yes, Prabhu.
In the outside world, everyone does a lot of sacrifice.
Yeah. Comment on that point first, and then so yesterday I got a phone call. So it was night. I was actually thinking, okay, what to speak. I was just going through this verse. So I met this person in Crossways once, and then I was distributing flyers in Footscray. So I was meeting him every day. An Indian guy, so he's from Kerala. So he was relating to me, and he told yesterday, he was saying, I am in a trouble. So I thought, I want to speak to somebody who is spiritual, so that I can get some solution, I can get some bit of peace of mind. I said, alright, yeah, you speak to me. So he was telling his problems. So he started telling, and then I said, okay, when can I, basically he wanted a job. So that is the bottom line. He wanted to improve his career, so that is the bottom line of the problem. Then he said, okay, so he said he wants to meet me. I said, okay, you can meet me, that's not an issue. So I said, he's working from morning till night. I said, after that, will you be able to come and meet me? So, can you come? So he said, oh, for the purpose of job, I don't care about sleep. I don't care about how much tired I am. I don't care about anything. You know, if I'm thinking about my progress in my career, you know, I don't care about anything. You know, he was just telling this, you know, again and again. So I was thinking, look, it's just yesterday night. You know, thinking of how much people are determined and how much people are ready to sacrifice when it comes to the material life. One time, Maharaj was mentioning one point that when it comes to our own things, then we are happy, we are very enthusiastic. But when it comes to about Krishna service, we start counting. Okay, if I do this, what will happen? If I don't do this, you know, we start our whole mathematics. You know, we start calculating time, mind, everything. So many things comes when it is about Krishna. So that is our, you know, we sacrifice for wrong things, that's right. And to be reminded, even for devotees as us, if we have to remind, we have to hear every day. We had to chant and we had to hear from the devotees, because that's the reason we are hearing, because we are in forgetfulness. And we forget, you know, that's our nature in the conditioned state. So just keep listening, so we can actually help ourselves and we can help others. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah. One cannot achieve perfection in other items of devotional service without achieving perfection in chanting. In chanting, in the sense, in the hearing process. In the hearing process, yeah.
So, in Java, we get so many techniques, like, you know, just see one mantra.
Yes.
Or hear the first Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
So, even if our son doesn't mind, it will distract us.
Yes.
So, is there any techniques in that way where we can settle the mind to focus on the reading or...
Yeah, sure. Sure. The technique is simple. Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter very clearly tells. The technique as such, there is no problem with the technique. Even the practice of the technique, it can become difficult. So that is, Krishna says two verses actually, we have to understand. One is Krishna says, yato yato mana chalati chanchalam astiram tato tato edat vashyet atmanyeva vasham nayet. This is one verse that we have to understand. That is, when this is talking about a yogi, we are also performing yoga, by the way. So, when a yogi is practicing, so we are practicing our yoga in terms of chanting or listening or service or whatever. So, when we are doing that, the mind wanders, as you are mentioning. The mind is going away from the holy name. Then it is mentioned, tato tato niyamya, again control, and atmanyeva vasham nayet, again bring it back to the holy name. So this is the first technique. Then Krishna further says, asamshayam mahabaho mana chanchalam astiram abhyasena cha kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyate. So this is again two points, that is abhyasa and vairagya. Abhyasa means practice and vairagya means detachment. So why one need detachment and what kind of detachment that one needs? So if the mind is wandering, by default, mind wants to stay in something else. That is our attachment. Is it right? We want to think about something which is not very important to us. Still we want to think about it. So that is our attachment. So one has to cut that. So that is detachment. So this detachment process we had to practice. So that is abhyasa. So one is yato yato manas chanchalam astiram. That is bringing the mind back. Second, with detachment, cutting the mind and bringing it back. So to bring the mind back to the holy name as soon as possible, one need detachment. Because otherwise by default we want to think about something else. One has to get that detachment. One has to cut it by the intelligence. One has to cut it and bring it back. And this process, if you abhyasa, if you practice again and again, over a period of time, the mind can settle.
Now, current consciousness, we usually think in terms of me and mind and things like that.
Yeah.
And then we identify with so many other things, things like that. You know, that we usually think in terms of me and mind, and then we suffer a lot.
Yeah.
The more, you know, in a practical sense.
What to?
I mean, the philosophy can say, you know, practically
and understand, or practically how to do it?
And the
Practically we can realize by following instructions of Guru. Practically, instructions Guru has given, so try to stick to that. When mind is distracting, understand this is me and mine. That I'm, you know, if mind is telling so many different things, no to do. That is mine and, you know, that is I. So rather we focus on Guru, so it becomes much easier. Can be difficult to relate to all the verses from Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, but simple instructions from Guru we can easily relate at the first level. Then we can understand Bhagavad Gita also. Okay. I think it's getting late. So. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Grandhra Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki.